The contents of this page have not been reviewed or endorsed by the Chicago Bulls. All opinions expressed by Sam Smith are solely his own and do not reflect the opinions of the Chicago Bulls or their basketball operations staff, parent company, partners, or sponsors. His sources are not known to the Bulls, and he has no special access to information beyond the access and privileges that go along with being an NBA-accredited member of the media.
So is it too late to change that Bulls in 7 prediction over the Washington Wizards? Yes, it is. Well, Bulls in 7 suggested, as I had mentioned previously on this esteemed audio presentation, that this was going to be a close series with the Wizards, that either team could win. I wasn't quite right since it wasn't that close a series. Well, it actually was close, but, you know, we're getting enough of these Bulls 5-game losses over the last 2 or 3 years, to 4 years, to say close but almost. How's that go, that Parcells thing? I guess it was, you are what your record is, and it was 1-4 in the first round. And pretty much over after the first 2 games, even though he pretended there was games to get, and Bulls did pull out game 3, and Nene was suspended in game 4, and seemed like, well, get that one, get back to Chicago, 2 out of 3 at home. Seemed to make sense at the time. But in short series, even 7 games, if you give away a home game, and especially if you give away 2, you really have little chance. And the Bulls lost that 13-point lead in game 1, 10-point lead in game 2, actually in the fourth quarter, and uncharacteristic, but they did lose those, and you know, too tough to recover for that in playoff games. Maybe you can give away 1 and in effect, have to win 5 games, but it's pretty tough to win 6. A bit of surprise. What happened in a lot of respects, other than, this guy played too much, and what was the matchup, and, you know, all those little elements. Where was Jimmer? Was the fact that the Bulls' probably biggest edge, I wouldn't say exactly not on the court, but it was more putting in Washington in position where they were going to have pressure on him. They didn't have pressure on them in either of the first 2 games, won those. Then they lose game 3, no pressure in game 4 because of Nene out, and win that one. Probably the only time the Bulls got Washington in that position was when they were trying to close. The Bulls out underperformed them, in effect, failing to get to 70 points and Washington only getting to 75. And the Wizards, while a good team, a lot of us thought preseason should be a playoff team, would be a playoff team, did become a playoff team, but suffered all season with this, I don't know if you call it underachieving since they hadn't been in the playoff for 6 years, but this notion of, can we get to 500? First time 500 in John Wall's career. And these milestones they were talking about were just fairly ludicrous, yet they couldn't keep getting over them. Which suggested to you they were a team that tightens up down the stretch, really didn't have a good game plan for finishing games, and you could take advantage of that with pressure and a little bit of offense, which the Bulls didn't have. So, obviously, should be pretty clear to management going into the offseason. Shooting. Got to have somebody to shoot the ball. Of course, not that that was unknown, but once Washington did a good job in taking out DJ Augustine, which is a sentence you really wouldn't have said earlier in the season, that the Bulls can have some success unless somebody takes out DJ Augustine. So Washington succeeded in doing that. DJ, after a good first game, shot under 30% the rest of the series. Noah, turned out, had some knee problems. Even with that all, if Taj Gibson doesn't sprain his ankle and has to go out with 8 minutes in the fourth quarter of game 5, and the Bulls give up, I think it was like 6 offensive rebounds in the last minute or something, any one of which ends a possession and they turn around the last couple of possessions, maybe going back for game 6, although hard to see him win it under those circumstances. But yet, that would have been the perfect situation where you put the pressure on Washington. Bulls are playing for nothing, and maybe you get back to game 7. Maybe, lots of maybes there. Anyway, you are what your record is, and your record was 1-4. So that playoff is over. But overall, even though, you know, a lot of the fans after seeing the playoff series, a disappointment, it really was an entertaining and terrific season. Losing Derrick Rose, disastrous 10 games into the season on the Western Conference trip in Portland. Just depressing for everybody associated with the team to see how hard Derrick had worked and how, even though he wasn't shooting well, how close he really was to being back to where he was, speed-wise, just blowing by guys. And, in that Portland game was his best game up the half, from badly outplaying Damian Lillard in the first half, just blowing by him. Lillard have no answers for him. I remember that dealt a huge blow to the team. Fell well under 500, started getting themselves back. Then that opportunity came up to gain the future flexibility at a time where the notion was, you know, DJ had just come aboard and still wasn't playing all that much. And the team was still up and down. So they made the deal with Bynum, the Luol Deng deal. Questionable whether he was going to return. Could you get something for him? And really, there were no teams trading first-round picks, and you didn't see anybody do that this season, which was expected with the hype for this coming draft. So the Bulls opted for the flexibility, and you figure after losing those two guys and making the run they did, really was a great second half of the season, essentially. Bulls having best record in the Eastern Conference, you know, as Indiana fell back. Brooklyn had a great start to the new year, January 1st, but then they fell back a little toward the end. Whether they were manipulating games to get to Miami for a second round thing, which they ended up get to. And I'll get to a little bit of the conference semifinals toward the end of this podcast, and which I know very few of you ever want these to end. But that said, you know, Noah's terrific improvement to get defensive player of the year. Taj Gibson's terrific improvement to the point where he could have or should have been a sixth man of the year, which looks like he'll go to Jamal Crawford, but Taj is right up there at the top of the voting. Terrific improvement. And essentially playing with seven guys and even scoring toward the end of the season, averaging 100 points over probably the last 10 or 12 games, and really playing well and just getting off to that bad start in the playoffs. And that dooms you. Short series, you just can't afford that. You know, given that, with a team really looking forward after the Deng trade and flexibility, creating a lot of possibilities. We know, we talked about it, that it was going to be, as the players would say, crazy. It's going to be a crazy offseason, and it started immediately. Literally a day or two after the season, there was a report out of L.A. that the Lakers were going to try to contact Tom Thibodeau about their coaching vacancy, of course, which they couldn't do, or at least ask the Bulls for permission. Since Thibodeau is under contract for 3 more years, and I highly, highly doubt under any circumstances the Bulls were going to entertain that. But that, of course, was an issue right away. Then, of course, all the media speculation about Carmelo Anthony's going to be a free agent, where he's going to go. You know, maybe he was having secret conversations with Nazim Muhammad and Ronnie Brewer. Who knows what was going on? Anyway, so a lot of speculation about Carmelo, where he'll end up, and with Phil Jackson coming to New York, and Bulls and Houston, or among others, mentioned Lakers as possibilities. Although I tend to think he's, given you've got Phil Jackson back in New York, you have the possibility for a tremendous cap room after this season. You've had a really underachieving team, and a situation where his family likes New York, and they can pay him substantially more. I would be very surprised if Anthony left New York. But that said, I was surprised that LeBron ended up in Miami. So you never say never in the NBA. But, you know, with two first-round picks, of course, and there's also the Bulls' question about amnesty with Carlos Boozer, who's one of the only player on the Bulls' roster who's eligible anymore for the amnesty. And so there's an awful lot of possibilities of things might happen with they have two number one draft picks, number 16 and 19, potentially salary cap room of $10 to $12 million, possibility of trading somebody to enhance more cap room. And so I think we're going to hear a lot of a lot of discussions, a lot of speculation leading all the way up through the draft. Any number of free agents are going to come up, trade possibilities. Kevin Love's name's been coming up for years and trade possibilities. Free agents out there, Pau Gasol, free agent Trevor Ariza, Lance Stevenson, Luol Deng. And so any number of possibilities given the Bulls, you know, could have cap room, may not, could have first round picks, may trade them. Certainly will have Tom Thibodeau, I believe. And going forward, frankly, you're even with the uncertainty, you're in pretty good shape. You know, going forward with Noah, who did have a minor knee procedure after the season, but supposedly not serious. Noah's improvement, Gibson, Jimmy Butler being back is up for a contract extension. Mike Dunleavy having a strong finish with a 30-point game in the playoffs. But what the playoffs showed, as much as anything for the Bulls, whatever the flaws were, is a desperate need for shooting. You just have to have shooting, especially the way the game's played now. You saw Atlanta in that last game take 40-something three-pointers, actually pushed Indiana to seven because shooting three-pointers in an earlier game, I think they made seven or eight in that second quarter of that game when they went up 3-2. Clearly a team that needs to get shooting, not just by keeping Dunleavy, but by adding one or two shooters to the mix. I mean, you see with the Miami success, a lot of it's been built around shooting. San Antonio has always brought in shooters. I think it's going to be probably the number one priority. And I don't think you get that in the draft. I think you got to get veterans, your, Jason Terry types. I don't know if he's due for a buyout in a couple of the moves he got included in trades, but that kind of a player, veteran player, sitting on a bench somewhere, maybe or not, like Ray Allen, who went to Miami, Mike Miller, Shane Battier. Miami did really well with picking up those kind of guys. And, you know, with the attention that Noah and Gibson have been getting, you can start to spread the court a little bit and implement those guys into your offense, which with the way the Bulls play defense under Thibodeau, you obviously should have a chance to be really good. And with Rose's return, obviously, that's the key. I know a lot of people dismiss that, sort of out of sight, out of mind. But Derek has been looking good. We see him saw him on the trips the last couple of months with the team. Always very upbeat, working out with the team. Expected to play for USA Basketball this summer, or at least try out for that World Cup team. So it'll be good to see him back on the court, and it's really going to be vital to have him back next season. And with him back and the flexibility they have, potentially draft picks, the Bulls should be in good position in a kind of a diminished Eastern Conference. And we'll see how diminished it is with into that second round. Now Miami, both Miami and Indiana still alive. After at least Indiana having a tough first round, looked like they might have one of the all-time upsets. And losing to a sub-500 Hawks team, really almost did, probably should have. Hawks just collapsed at the end of game six at home. Offense completely bogged down, no good shots, gave up a 5-point lead in the last couple of minutes and lost, and then got blown out in game seven. So they'll play the Wizards, and that'll be the test for the Wizards. I think overall the Wizards are a more versatile team and have a shot at them. Indiana's story going into this, and I've written about this, and I'm not doing a regular Monday NBA notes column once the season ends, but I'm doing periodic NBA stories, and do have one this past Monday about the, sort of the highlights of the first round, which was just great. And we've heard so much about it with all the overtime games, the close games. And so I just talked about the 10 top moments or stories or games, shots of the first round. And then a look at the second round, the conference semifinals, which began Monday. So I'm doing this Monday morning before the start of the round, so it could be posted after some of those games are over. But we'll see if Washington has enough. Indiana's story, like I said, is now they can play Roy Hibbert. I've always been amazed, actually, that Hibbert's had any kind of career. Yeah, I know he's a big guy by the basket, but I've rarely seen anybody as uncoordinated to have that much success in the NBA, or at least make an all-star teams. But brutal playoffs, brutal finish of the season. A lot of internal issues in Indiana that I think we're going to find out later. There was some major internal things that roiled that team. Anyway, supposedly in position now for a run to the conference finals like it was projected, Indiana and Miami. So I'm going to step out on a limb that I hear cracking already. I'm going Washington to upset Indiana, and I'm going to take Brooklyn to upset Miami. I think as well as Miami's done in the first round, it was obviously no test with Al Jefferson hurt. I think the Heat are quite a bit diminished with Battier, a limited loss of Mike Miller, who hit some big shots in the playoffs, and Ray Allen having a subpar season. I think that shooting that they've had that carried him to two titles, and just barely, obviously, last year when San Antonio melted down at the end of Game 6, I don't think it's quite there this season. I think with even though Brooklyn beat him four times in the regular season, they're all close games, a one-point game, overtime game that really weren't relevant particularly to looking forward. But Kevin Garnett plays Chris Bosh well as anybody does, and will give him a hard time, even though in limited minutes, Garnett can't play all that much. But obviously, Pearson, Garnett, we've been looking for this one. I think Brooklyn will end up blowing a couple of games. They should win. But I think they could turn it into a long series and win in six or seven games. So that'd be a heck of a conference finals that nobody had, Washington and Brooklyn. And I don't think anybody else has it now either other than me. And then the Western Conference, which was great first round, just great stuff. The Oklahoma City Memphis series with four straight overtime games, Portland Houston, that amazing ending with Lillard shot, great series, just great stuff. Anyway, so they have the Spurs and Portland. I think Portland much too much of a perimeter team. I think San Antonio sort of got caught up in a rivalry with Dallas, the Texas thing. You know, it's sort of a foreign country down there. We don't exactly know what goes on down there among those rivalries. But those always turn out to be tough games. And I think San Antonio will not exactly have an easy time, but an easier time with Portland, which gets caught up in shooting a lot of jump shots, awful lot of jump shots. Don't get a whole lot inside, although Aldrich has gotten a little tougher. But really relies on that jump shot from the left side, which he's been great at. But I see San Antonio getting through that one, not a tremendous amount of problems. And Oklahoma City and the Clippers, obviously the Donald Sterling story. We've heard plenty about that. The Clippers survived through that first round. Great series with Golden State. Tough, you know, win that seventh game at home. Griffin and DeAndre Jordan kind of taking over at the end, the last couple of minutes. And that's where Golden State was most vulnerable with Bogut out. Took them long enough, but they finally were able to dominate the inside. Although it's great to see Stephen Curry. He's just fabulous to watch. And they're shooting. Draymond Green, one of the great stars of the series, playoffs really, to come from nowhere. Not nowhere exactly, but give that kind of performance he did, shooting the ball. Tough guy. Great second-round pickup. And a lot of talk about Mark Jackson losing his job, but those things happen. Lionel Hollins didn't deserve to lose his job. George Karl didn't deserve to lose his job. And, you know, look, the owner doesn't want you. It's his team. Do what he wants. But that said, I think Jim Jackson did a great job with those players. Played hard, competed all the way, never gave up, never gave in. And you could tell the players really supportive of him. So I think that'd be a tough situation where I think Golden State be in position to take a step back, and if they make a change, much like the Grizzlies and the Nuggets did. But that said, I just don't think the Clippers have quite enough for Oklahoma City, who I always criticize. I shouldn't say always criticize, but can't stand the way they watch them play, the way Westbrook monopolizes the ball, and then Durant, because he doesn't get it so much from Westbrook, then he has to shoot it. Durant gets such tough shots as a result. I mean, if Durant played with a real point guard and maybe another shooter that could spread the floor, he would get such easy shots. He could get 40 points easily. Takes tough shots and still averages 30 points. Will be the MVP of the league, no question about it. But that all said, I think they just have, those two guys are too much overall talent for the Clippers. I think the big issue that's sort of been overlooked all year defensively with the Clippers, is not so much the interior, where, you know, they're pretty good. They're very good, really. It's the wing players playing Reddick. Matt Barnes is probably the only one who, you know, gives him a little bit of athleticism on the wing, but that's been a weak part and just going to be impossible in a lot of ways to guard Durant. And I just think, even though we've seen Oklahoma City on the verge of being out, I could see him in the conference finals again against the Spurs and even get through. And that said, backing up for the Lillard shot, obviously, to me, is the biggest thing we saw in the first round. Just great, great, great stuff. Pierce's block at the end, where they really forced Lowry into a bad shot, shouldn't have taken that shot. Aldridge opening up the playoffs with 46 and 43. That great Vince Carter last second shot, the game winner, that basically stretched that series to seven games. Durant with that crazy off balance three, where Marc Gasol fouled him in game two for the 4-point play, even though they lost that game in overtime. Incredible highlights. Houston, that kid, the D-League kid, Daniels, undrafted. I think Virginia Commonwealth, was he? Comes, hits that three, brings Houston back from the brink when they're about to go down to 3-0. Reggie Jackson, when Oklahoma City's about to go down 3-1, 32 points, five at the end of regulation, six free throws in overtime. Just great, great stuff, even though it didn't count. And one of the most incredible, stupid ones would have been that Toronto, when they went up 3-2 on Brooklyn, and the ball got kicked into the backcourt, and Deron Williams throws up this off-balance 60-footer sort of the end of the game, and Valanciunas goaltends it, which would have won the game on a three-pointer. But it was a backcourt violation. It would have been, for your old baseball fans, the sort of Merkel's boner, which I don't want to get into talking too much about Merkel and 1909 Cubs or whatever that was, but one of the stupid, would have been one of the worst plays in NBA history. But that said, other, you know, Atlanta winning two games in Indiana, going up 3-2, hitting nine threes in the second quarter. Again, and like I said, the Grizzlies four overtimes, and Zach Randolph got suspended and just can't finish. And sadly enough to remember Bradley Beal scoring like a dozen points in the fourth quarter in that game too, when Washington really turned it around with that second game win in Chicago. But a great, great overall first round, great NBA stuff, great basketball, and I think it's going to continue into the second round with some of these matchups. So I'll stay on top of it. We'll get together again.